I want to take you back in history this morning and tell you a little about the Soweto Uprising. The Soweto Uprising was a series of demonstrations and protests led by black school children in South Africa back in June of 1976. Students from various schools began to protest in the streets of Soweto in response to the introduction of Afrikaans as the only medium of instruction in black schools. Black South African high school students were protesting because when they were forced to use Afrikaans in their schools, that was not their home language. It was not their personal language. They associated Afrikaans with apartheid, and they wanted to do something about this forced change. The decree that Afrikaans only would be used in the schools was deeply resented by the students and by the black population. Bishop Desmond Tutu said that Afrikaans to us represents the language of the oppressor. And teachers' unions and organizations objected to the decree as well. One of the things that they said about this mandatory use of Afrikaans is that the change in language, in the language of instruction, would force the students to focus on understanding the language instead of the subject material. And that would make critical analysis and that kind of learning very difficult. Resentment grew until the 30th of April, 1976, when children, this is important, when children at Orlando West Junior School in Soweto went on strike and refused to go to school. Others joined them. On the morning of 16 June 1976, between 10 and 20,000 black students walked from their schools to Orlando Stadium for a rally to protest having to learn Afrikaans in school. Many students who participated in that march had arrived at the school that morning not knowing about the planned protest, but as they heard about it, they too decided to join the march. Teachers in the area supported the march because they emphasized that it was being conducted with good discipline and peaceful actions. It was a respectful action. Student Tsitsi Mashinini led students from Morris Isaacson High School to join up with others who were walking, and the students began to march towards the stadium. They soon found that police had barricaded the road along their intended route. The leader of the action committee asked the crowd not to provoke these police, and the march took another route to avoid the confrontation and eventually ended up near Orlando High School. This crowd of between 3,000 and 10,000 students made its way, continuing to gather. The students sang, they waved placards, but it was, by all accounts, a peaceful demonstration. And then the police sent one of their canines into the protesters. And the response of the protesters was to kill the dog. At that provocation, the police began to shoot at the children. Among the first students to be shot dead were 15-year-old Hastings and 12-year-old Hector. The violence continued to escalate. By nightfall, the violence had not yet abated. police vans, armored vehicles patrolled the streets throughout the night. Emergency clinics were swamped with injured and bloody children. The police requested that the hospital provide them with names of all the victims of bullet wounds so that they could prosecute them for rioting. The hospital administrator passed the request to the doctors to collect the names of those with bullet wounds, but the doctors refused to create a list and instead recorded all bullet wounds as abscesses. The number of people who died is often given as 176. Other estimates go as high as 700. Many years later, Nobel Peace Laureate Desmond Tutu defied what was a continued government ban on political funerals, and for the first time denied that ban and interposed himself between black mourners and white security forces at a funeral to help prevent a violent confrontation. At this particular funeral, there were dozens of armored vehicles, hundreds of heavily armed soldiers, and a crowd of about 1,500 mourners. Things were getting very tense. People who were there reported that they thought it was on the edge of violence, and Bishop Tutu stepped in. He convinced the officials to supply 7 buses that would transport the crowd away from this area to a local cemetery where they could bury a 16-year-old victim of previous unrest. In addressing the crowds, Tutu condemned the regulations announced by the white minority government that prohibited any mention of political issues at funerals for unrest victims. He publicly violated the ban that they had placed on making any political statements at these funerals. Citing the Apostle Peter's defiance of the high priest of Jerusalem in the New Testament, Tutu told the crowd, "I do not want to defy the government, but the scriptures state quite clearly when there is a conflict between the law of God and the law of man, we must obey God and not man. And so at funerals, I will continue to preach the gospel." The bishop also made an emotional plea to the government to allow blacks to freely conduct funerals for unrest victims. "Please," he said, "allow us to bury our dead with dignity. Please do not rub our noses in the dust. We are already hurt. We are already down. Don't trample on us. We are human beings. We are not animals. And when we have a death, we cry like you. Blessed are the peacemakers." Renee August is a black South African woman and Anglican priest. She is co-director of the Justice Conference South Africa. She was mentored by Bishop Tutu. She tells the story of one of those funerals where the people were gathered and they weren't supposed to be. And Bishop Tutu, in his opening remarks, said something like this. Now, you have to imagine the scene. This is not a funeral in a church. This is not like probably anything you've been to. This is thousands of mourners, hundreds or thousands of armed police and security, television cameras. Everybody wants to know, is this situation going to explode? That's what we're talking about here. And Reverend August describes this this one example of Bishop Tutu's welcome to the crowds. Welcome. Welcome. Everybody. Welcome. If you are here to support these families who are mourning, welcome. If you are here because you are grieving, welcome. If you are here because you want to spy on us, welcome. If you are here because you are the security police with your guns ready to shoot us, welcome. We want you to know that we love you, that you belong to us and we belong to you. And if you want to be on God's side, come and join us now. And we can end this. God is very sad when God looks at how we are fighting with one another. So you are welcome. And you are also welcome to come and join us. Reverend August says that Bishop Tutu would just go on and on with this welcome. She said it felt like it took forever. And she said, I would want to stop him if I had the power to. But he would just carry on and on and on, welcoming these people who I actually wished would die. Blessed are the peacemakers. From the Beatitudes, from the Gospel of Matthew, from the 5th chapter, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God. I've been thinking a whole lot the last few weeks about Jesus and the peacemakers and the peace that Jesus offers. I'm thinking about those scenes from meek and mild Jesus' life. So like when Jesus was born in a stable or a cave, with blood, sweat, tears, vomit, animals maybe milling around, possibly in a city that was big enough for 50,000, but five times that squeezed into the city for the census. I'm thinking of Jesus, the 12-year-old, talking back to his parents. You know, it's always peaceful to have an adolescent child around the house. I'm thinking about Jesus taking the children into his lap and how sweet and peaceful that must have been until his own disciples started assaulting him about his decision and he had to practice some direct dealing. I'm thinking about Jesus so peaceful in the prow of the boat that he could fall asleep until the disciples start screaming and pounding him on his back and telling him they're drowning. Jesus at peace in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he goes away by himself to pray. But then there's sweat like great drops of blood, and his disciples have fallen asleep rather than wait with him, and he has to do this direct dealing again. Perhaps it was peaceful that Easter morning in the graveyard, before dawn, waiting to appear to his beloveds. I don't know. Makes me think about my grandma saying, you can't get peace till you die. Perhaps all of this is why Jesus didn't say, blessed are the peaceful, but blessed are the peacemakers. Not blessed are the peaceful, but blessed are the peacemakers. Jim Wallace, in his book that we're drawing from, said, we have to figure out how to move people from peace lovers to peacemakers. There's so much I'd love to say about this morning, but it would just go on and on. So I've picked a few things. I picked a few things that seemed to me to hit what it means to move from a peace lover to a peace maker. And I want to start with a quote from Henry Nouwen. Henry Nouwen said, "We cannot suffer with the poor when we are unwilling to confront those persons and systems that cause poverty. We cannot set the captives free when we do not want to confront those who carried the keys. We cannot profess our solidarity with those who are oppressed when we are unwilling to confront the oppressor. Care without confrontation fades quickly to fruitless, sentimental commiserating." That's what I want to say to you this morning. That being a peacemaker is not very peaceful at all. Some examples that I have seen. One of the things that besets our country is this confusion about what represents truth anymore, or facts, or whose facts, or disinformation. And I saw our president call out disinformation, and I saw him pilloried for it. And I wondered if it was wise, and if you should put yourself out there like that and kind of call people to account. And then I remembered something I told y'all many, many years ago about a situation that evolved during World War II. During World War II, there was great concern among United States officials about the spread of misinformation that was happening. So it seemed benign. So for example, there was a scrap metal collection. And for it to be successful, they needed everybody to join in, right? Your tin cans, your whatever, all your scrap metal. And a story started circulating, and I don't know how they circulated this, I guess at the, you know, the water coolers and the clotheslines and all, without their phones and stuff. But this story starts circulating about this woman who wanted to join this scrap metal effort, so she threw in her husband's golf clubs. But the husband was able to retrieve them when he found them for sale at the Goodwill, which made people say, "I'm not giving my scrap metal to that effort. Look what's happening." And stories like that spread and spread, and they saw an actual decrease in the amount of scrap metal that was being contributed. There were lots of examples, but they decided, well, what we need to do is we need to have a department dedicated to clearing up this misinformation. So the government created a rumor project in the Office of War Information. And they enlisted people to report what are the rumors that are gathering hold in your communities. And one of the areas that they really paid attention to was the schools. What are the kids saying? Because what the kids were saying, they had heard at home. So all of these rumors were sent to a sorting clearinghouse, and they were divided into categories, and immediately the government would put out correct information to stop these rumors. Sometimes we think that just not passing a rumor along is enough, that just not spreading disinformation ourselves is enough. Today I challenge you to be a peacemaker, to stop, to correct it when you can, and to refuse to accept it without challenge. Reverend Ken Martin used to remind us that the sages of our faith encouraged us to pray, not because our prayers necessarily changed things, but because they changed us. To lift up someone that you are at odds with in prayer makes it very difficult to continue to be angry with them. To lift up the suffering of those without water or food makes it difficult to abuse or pollute our own resources. I realize this week that I need to be a peacemaker, not because I'm going to change the world, but because trying to be a peacemaker changes me. Getting involved changes me. I'm going to give you an example. On Friday night, I was participating in that great Texas pastime called high school football. About midway through the third quarter, the announcer came over the loudspeaker and said, and you could tell immediately this was not just your ordinary announcement. The announcer came on and said, "This is an announcement for the visiting section." Ed Noble, your son is lost, and he is waiting for you at the concession stand. You could hear a collective sigh from the crowd of 10,000 or so. Not just from the visitor side, but from the home side as well. A sigh of relief that the boy was found. A sigh of relief that his father would know where to find him. A sigh of relief that the boy was safe, even though my grandmother's heart hoped that the concession stand attendants would know to verify the father's ID when he came to pick up the little boy. A sigh of relief that the one who was lost was found. The one who was in danger was safe, that the families were together. And I decided, because I want to be a peacemaker, I'm going to tell that story. And I'm going to attach this to the end. Governor Abbott, this is how we treat neighbors in Texas. Even at a grudge match between rivals under the Friday night lights, I'm writing that story up and I'm mailing it to the governor, and it will not change him. But it changes me. It helps me move from feeling powerless, a meek and gentle peace lover, to a peacemaker, calling out injustice when I see it. Not responsible for fixing it or changing it, but for me. I started today with St. Francis's prayer for peace. Lord, make me an instrument, a maker of your peace. I want to end today with a take on St. Francis's poem that we're not sure who wrote. I've seen it attributed to Sir Francis Drake. I've seen it attributed to Anonymous. But here's where I will end you. I will end today for you peacemakers. Lord, make me a channel of your disturbance. Where there is apathy, let me provoke. Where there is silence, may I be a voice. Where there is too much comfort and too little action, grant disruption. Where there are doors closed and hearts locked, grant me the willingness to listen. When laws dictate and pain is overlooked, grant me the willingness to listen. When tradition speaks louder than need, grant me the willingness to listen. Disturb us, O Lord, teach us to be radical. Grant that I may seek rather to do justice than to talk about it. To be with as well as for the poor. To love the unlovable as well as the lovely. To teach the passion of Jesus in the pain of those we meet. To accept responsibility to be church. Lord, make me a channel of your disturbance. Blessed are the peacemakers.